And really, the flow of the study, which I'd like you to describe, really comes right out of the recurrent score value that's given to the patient. Before you get into that and why the decision was made to do this type of design, can you talk a little bit about the background of the data on the Oncotype and sort of what your take was on it as it evolved out over the last few years?
Sure. Well, there were many molecular tests. Well, I shouldn't say many, a handful of externally validated molecular tests that were available at the time that this trial was being designed. The Oncotype DX was chosen to be integrated into TailorX for several reasons. First of all, it was validated in a group of patients who had ER-positive, node-negative disease, the same group of patients who are overtreated, where we felt integrating a molecular test would be most beneficial. Secondly, the test can be done on routinely processed paraffin-embedded tissue, a huge advantage for this test compared to some of the other molecular diagnostic tests that are available. Thirdly, the work that led to the approval, CLIA approval of this test, which of course is another important factor, was done through the cooperative group system. And so that it builds upon some of the work that has been done by the cooperative groups and by the intergroup.
Specifically also the NSABP B14 and B20 studies.
Correct, absolutely. And in fact, NSABP is also participating in TailorX as of all the cooperative groups. But to answer your question, the test was designed initially by, first of all, developing the technology that would allow one to measure RNA expression in paraffin-embedded tissue, which is a big technical challenge because of degradation in the RNA. Secondly, the development of the primers and validation of the techniques for all of the individual genes that were eventually evaluated. The third step was selecting genes sort of an informed rather than an uninformed way. So, for example, when one does a typical gene array in fresh tissue, one uses a chip that can have anywhere from 20 to 40,000 genes. So that's an uninformed way of looking for specific genes. Here, the scientists at Genomic Health selected a panel of about 250 genes that they felt from the literature were likely to be clinically relevant. They then looked at that panel of 250 genes on three different data sets, patients with a mixture of clinical features, node-positive, node-negative, HER2-positive, HER2-negative, ER-positive, ER-negative, and they found in univariate analysis that about 40 of those genes came out as being significant. And then they honed it down further to a panel of 16 genes, which cluster into various groups. There's an ER-positive group, or an ER group, I should say, proliferation group, HER2 group, and some other groups. And then they developed the algorithm that was used to develop the recurrence score. They then took that information once they developed the algorithm and prospectively validated it in patients treated on the B14 trial, those patients who had ER-positive lymph node negative disease who had received 5 years of tamoxifen, and found that the score predicted outcome whether evaluated as a trinary variable, that is low, intermediate, or high risk, or as a continuous variable. And subsequently, they found that it also was predictive of outcome in placebo-treated patients. So it's a prognostic factor in both untreated and treated patients. And when they looked at the data in the B20 trial, which compared tamoxifen versus tamoxifen plus CMF, found that only patients who had the high recurrence score seemed to be benefiting from the administration of CMF.
And actually, I think some of those patients also got M to F as another type of chemotherapy.
Correct.
But the thing that was shocking really about that was that not only did they benefit, but the magnitude of benefit. In those high-risk patients, my read on it was a 75% relative reduction, although I guess there's some, you know, sort of standard deviation there.
Well, as George Sledge has said, the Oncotype DX has turned CMF into targeted therapy for breast cancer.
Before we go on to the TailorRx study, the bottom line sort of for clinicians that comes out of this is, A, if they're in the 50% who have low recurrent score, there's not much benefit of chemotherapy, if any. B, if they're in the high recurrent score, there's a very significant benefit of chemotherapy. C, if they're intermediate, we're not sure. Is that your conclusion?
That is exactly right. And the problem in terms of applying the test in clinical practice is that in the B14 trial, these were essentially unselected patients. This trial was done 20 years ago at a time when no therapy was a standard. It was done at a time when routine screening mammography was not done with anywhere near the frequency that we do it now. So biologically, these may be different breast cancers because we know that screen-detected breast cancers have a better prognosis than non-screen-detected breast cancers. And we know that most of the early-stage breast cancers we're seeing now are screen-detected compared with many of the cancers that were detected in B14. Secondly, we're now doing sentinel lymph node biopsies in patients where that was not being done in the 80s. So we're culling out a group of patients who would have probably, you know, no longer be included. So I would suspect that as many as 15 or 20%, we don't know for sure, but as many as 15 to 20% of patients who were enrolled on the B14 trial may, by today's methodologies, may have wound up having a positive sentinel node. We don't know that for sure, but that certainly could contribute to the lower event rates that we're now seeing. Thirdly, in TAILOR-X, we've excluded patients who have HER2-positive disease for two reasons. First of all, many of the patients who have HER2-positive disease, or most of them, do wind up having a high recurrence score. And second, we now have a targeted therapy for that group of patients, adjuvant trastuzumab. And finally, the kinds of patients that clinicians would be doing an Oncotype DX test are not the same patients who are necessarily studied in B14. Clinicians would be more apt to do the test in patients where they're uncertain about the potential benefits of chemotherapy. That is, say, a tumor between 1 and 2 centimeters that has an intermediate grade. Whereas B14 included patients with larger and smaller tumors, all types of grades. And so what you're going to see and what has been seen in the post-marketing experience is that you'll see more patients with a mid-range recurrence score. With regard to the utility of the test, it's now being used in a different population. That is, it's most likely to be used by clinicians in situations where there's uncertainty about the use of chemotherapy. That is, patients who have tumors between 1 and 2 centimeters that may have intermediate grade. Whereas in the B14 validation study included a more diverse population of patients. So what you're likely to see and what is being seen to some extent is more patients have a mid-range recurrence score where the results are not necessarily informative.
Also, now we're using AIs in postmenopausal women. That was just tamoxifen. We're using chemo way beyond CMF and M2F. But bottom line is, I'm just kind of curious before you go into the trial, right now, you know, sort of in a non-protocol setting, do you think that this assay, the basic principle, what I stated before, is something that can be utilized in clinical practice?
Oh, absolutely. I believe that this assay can and should be used in clinical decision-making process outside the context of the clinical trial if and when the result of the test is likely to influence a treatment decision. So, for example, if you have a patient who, for whatever reason, you know endocrine therapy alone is the only option, then it, you know, doing the test can provide you with more precise prognostic information, but it's not going to really alter your management. I would do the test in circumstances where the results could potentially alter management.
What about other factors that could be factored in, particularly tumor size? I'm curious what your thoughts were on the study that was done at a Kaiser looking at that. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, the Kaiser study was a very important study because it validated on a large-scale basis, in a population-based study, the utility of the test. And that's quite unusual for other diagnostic tests, molecular tests that have been tested. In fact, I think that that study is unique in the field. So I think it just adds to the very strong body of evidence supporting the validity of the test and the potential utility of the test.
What about factoring in things like tumor size? You have a 3.5 centimeter tumor. It's got a low recurrence score. Are you going to be okay with not giving chemo?
Well, that's the critical question, is how confident you are in the test to use it to make clinical decisions. And that's true for any test. And again, I think the reason to do the test is because clinical parameters are not, they're reproducible. If you show 10 pathologists a tumor and ask them to measure it, it's pretty likely that you're going to get agreement, at least with regard to size, most of the time. But there's a lack of agreement with other things, such as grade, for example. And the point is that this test does more reliably predict outcome than clinical features. That was shown in the original study.
A patient comes to you for a second opinion who has a HER2-positive tumor, maybe a small tumor, who's had the Oncotype DX done, and it's low, even though it's in the NSABP data, they didn't have anybody like that. I've heard, quote, there are people like that out there. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not true. Would you consider the result in your decision?
Probably not. If I had a tumor who by all of the other clinical criteria met indications for giving adjuvant trastuzumab and chemotherapy, I would proceed.
It's been said that perhaps this technology is going to be the way of the future in terms of measuring HER2 and ER. What do you think about that?
There is emerging literature suggesting that gene expression by RT-PCR is a more reliable way of quantifying or estimating the degree of expression for that target than other methods. Where that's certainly true for ER, measuring ER expression in the Oncotype DX assay, it's now being published by other authors using similar methodologies. So yes, I think that that is the case. The problem is that there isn't as much standardization as there probably should be with regard to measuring and reporting ER and PR as there should be.
In the community.
In the community,
yes.
Using conventional immunohistochemistry.
Absolutely.
And I know the American College of Pathology is trying to tackle that issue head on in developing some guidelines for that. Of course, one of the issues here is that with regard to Oncotype DX and any molecular test is that you have this test being performed in a single lab that has extraordinary measures in place for quality control versus doing FDA-approved tests in local pathology laboratories where there's a much greater degree of variability. So you're comparing apples and oranges. So some have raised the question, well, if you sent this specimen, the same specimen, to one lab that was doing the ER by IHC
Craig Allred
and so forth, would you get a result that would be similar or comparable to the Oncotype DX? And I think that remains an open question, but that service right now is not available.